Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the PVD cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, and I know it's been almost forever since I've been out on the internet with a new podcast. What can I say? It's track season. It's over, finally. Very successful season. I'm glad to be back. And joining me on this episode is a man that has, well, been around the indie scene and professional wrestling for a long time. Despite the fact that he's quite a young man, a very controversial figure, the Butcher, Jeremy Madrox. Jeremy?
Hi-yo!
How you doing?
Great. Happy to finally be here.
I know, I was going to take some flack for not having you on sooner.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I can't believe you had Dodge and Spicer on before me.
I don't know. I apologize.
Well, I guess you just got to work out the kinks somehow.
Right, exactly. You don't want to be like the rough edit, if you will.
No, I want to
have everything smoothed out.
I want to be the season everybody remembers.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Is that what this is? The second season now?
It seems that way.
You had a long enough break.
I'm sorry, man. It's hard to be the head coach, man. It was hard.
I guess.
You know? I mean, junior high school track, it's serious in some parts of this region, if you will.
Shit gets real, man.
It does. It does. But, hey, you know, when you walk away with some of the hardware that we walked away with. You know,
first place trophies.
First place city championship in Lancaster. Yeah. That's right. There you go. That hasn't happened in a long time.
Well, it is Lancaster.
Well, that is true.
Yeah. I don't know that there's... It's quite the athletic hotbed it used to be.
No. Do you know my first time ever in Lancaster was to go see an IWA show?
At the Desert Rose?
No. At the fairgrounds. The only reason why I went... Vader.
Ah.
Did you go to that show?
No,
you go
to that show? I don't. I was already gone by then. Did he work Matt Taylor that show?
No, he worked two people I had never seen or heard of, and I don't remember their names.
I bet one of them was Matt Taylor, because he told me a story about working Vader that in the back, when they were talking with Vader, he was very cordial with Vader. Whatever you want, sir. Yes, sir. So he was good with Vader, but the other guy was, I don't know if he was being a smartass or if he just rubbed Vader the wrong way or what, but they got out there and Vader told Matt Taylor, "You're cool." The other guy got Vadered, as you could say.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I went with Big White and Brady West. We were there. And okay. I think Matt Mason wrestled Robbie Starr on that show, too. And I remember that, of course, Big White is very loud. As am I.
Did he go, "OH!"
No, we actually started a "fuck them up, Vader, fuck them up" chant. Which Vader, I remember, turned to that side that we were at and goes, "There are kids here." We then stopped for a few moments and then said, "We're sorry, Vader," which it got a chuckle out of him, I think.
Well, good.
You know, and then he proceeded to beat the ever-loving hell out of the two opponents.
I'm going to have to ask Matt Taylor if he was one of those
people. Okay, I don't remember the names. I don't recall. Probably because the sound system was not very good, I'm sure.
No. I completely refuse to believe that statement. There are no bad sound systems in indie wrestling.
My favorite is the one when the microphone broke on me.
When?
That was in Logan, Ohio. That was a Dave Lanning production.
Yeah,
and we were, I kid you not, using an actual, like, Play School karaoke with machine.
I thought you were going to say you're using a Play School microphone with a spring in it.
No. I think it could have been better if it was that, and not this monstrosity that he had.
Oh, I mean, that's your tool.
I know.
You need to bring your own microphone. I like the one you've got here.
Yeah, thank you.
It looks like a probe of some sort.
Yes, it does. It looks like some type of space-aged thing.
I mean, this is no $10 Radio Shack microphone.
No.
This thing looks like it's the real deal.
Yes.
I like, as I
mentioned, smoothing things out for you to come on the PVD cast.
All right, good.
So,
did Dodge have this?
Dodge did have this.
Well, I don't feel so special.
But I had to figure out how to tweak it and everything.
All right.
So, by the way, got to give a quick shout out to Mikey. He has been under the weather a lot.
Yeah, he has.
And in all seriousness, we're glad that you're out of the hospital, Mikey, and you're feeling better. Godspeed, man. Hope you get back up on your feet quick.
In the words of a very wise man, it ain't no game.
Right. Very much so. All right, well, let's start about how you got into professional wrestling, if you will.
I was a lifelong fan. I mean, it was always on TV as a kid because both my dad and mom watched. And I've said before on a different podcast, I inherited just a plethora of old shows taped off of TV, closed circuit tapes, I'm pretty sure, and old After magazines from my mom. And I still have quite a few of those. But the way I got started, one day I was watching, I want to say it was late on a Friday night, maybe. I found the International Wrestling Alliance on Community Channel 21 here in Columbus. And that was the first time I had seen indie wrestling. And it was on very sporadically. And then one day I saw it and there was a commercial for the training school. At the end of the commercial, there was a little 10-second snippet about the kids training class from ages, I think, 8 to 18. So right away I knew that was it. I had to do it. I got this whole presentation ready to give to my dad when he got home about how I had to go do this. And, you know, I don't even think I got to finish it. My dad said, if you want to do it, we'll do it, but you got to keep your grades up. So that was on a Monday, I think. I set up a tryout for the next day, which was Tuesday. I had my tryout, which consisted of not a whole lot, but I did take a fist drop off the second rope from Bull Miller. I think he was just trying to see if I would get freaked out and leave, but I didn't. And he told me I could start class the next night, and I did.
Can we go back real quick?
Oh, God.
Because I remember talking to your dad in Zanesville at a PWC show, I think. Or no, it was the FIW show. Excuse me. And your dad told me the story that he was in Minnesota during the heyday of the AWA. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And that's one of the big like hooks for him, that he just was in the Minnesota area, and I don't know if it was St. Paul or Minneapolis. I don't recall.
Yeah,
and was it for the service? He was in the Coast Guard. Okay.
Minnesota being the land of 10,000 lakes, they have quite a few training areas there. He was in an area called Oakdale, which I think is like kind of what Lancaster is to Columbus.
Yeah, okay.
That's what Oakdale is that to Minneapolis.
Okay.
But he would tell me stories as a kid about how he used to go to this bar where the wrestlers would work as bouncers and the wrestlers would hang out and party there. But I think I always just kind of thought, oh yeah, sure you did, Dad. And I did think that until the Road Warriors DVD came out.
Right.
And they showed the bar, and before they said the name of the bar, my dad said the name of it. And when he said it, it just kind of snapped with me, like, holy shit. He's for real, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't doubt that maybe he was at the bar one day and he, you know, saw Rick Rude there.
Right, saw, yeah. Baron Von Raschke right. or someone like that. But, yeah, right.
But he, you know, he knew it. So, apparently, you know, he was there when, I mean, you think back to the AWA and they were making a go for it. You know, Vern was trying to give Sheiky Baby $10,000 or $100,000. What was it?
I think it was $100,000
to break Hogan's leg and bring him the belt. So, I mean, my dad was there for the AWA's heyday. And
one thing I'm just going to throw out there, the AWA made a lot of the superstars of wrestling. I mean, historically, you look back, there would be no Ric Flair without the AWA. There would have not been Hulk Hogan. There would not have been all of the stars that...
Mike Enos. Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to think of a... Damn you. I was trying to think of a lame one. You beat me to it. I really was.
Mike Enos, Wayne Bloom, The Patriot.
Brad Riggins.
I mean, Brad Riggins is the one who trained half of them.
That's right. Greg Gagne.
Yeah.
I never much cared for Greg Gagne. I will freely admit that. He was one of the faces that I never got behind. I'm like, I don't like this dude.
I can't remember who it was. Somebody had an interesting conversation with me once that what if they would have made Greg heel? And like kind of did what Shane McMahon did when he was thumbing his nose to Vince. What if Greg would have been a heel back then? Because I bet he would have been more over.
I think so too.
I think he would have had a better chance to be over if he could have been the rich, snobby punk who didn't know how good he had it, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I wish whoever you are, if you hear this and that was your idea, I'm not taking credit for it. I just don't remember things like I used to.
Well, anyways, let's go back to training in the IWA. Yep. So how long did you train before you had a match?
About 2 weeks. Well, we had like the gym shows, and the YWA, as it was known, the Youth Wrestling Alliance, had a gym show the last Sunday of every month, and I started training on May 13th. My tryout was May 12th, so that was 98. It's been 15 years. Think about that. That's more than half my life.
Yeah.
So I had a tag match 2 weeks later. Where I was hit in the head with a shoe and pinned.
That was the end of the match?
That was the end of my match, yes. I didn't start traveling until that November.
Now wait, can we go back to this first match for a minute?
Yeah.
Did you get a lot of action?
Or I don't.
Did Bull Miller, or I don't know, whoever was in charge. I'm assuming it's Bull Miller was in charge of the YWA.
I mean, technically at that point he was, finger quote, in charge, end okay. finger quote, but we just kind of ran around and acted like idiots. I remember I was tagging with a fellow by the name of The Crippler. It was a tag team match, myself and The Crippler versus Killer Kyle and Tank Jr.
Oh, I remember Tank Jr.
Tank Jr., also known as Sheik Jr., also known as T-Bone, mm-hmm. Kyle's little brother. I think when I started, I was 13. He was probably 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was my first match. I don't remember many of my first matches on the gym shows. I do remember that my dad kept telling me I needed to have more character and show more charisma and, you know, not just kind of walk out there cold. And my excuse was, Dean Malenko can do it, so can I. And I felt like that was a real legitimate argument. But I don't...
I would not argue. Right there, you would win that debate. I would just go, okay.
I don't know what it was, but the first time that I traveled was to Lancaster, Ohio at the Desert Rose. And maybe it was just because it was a crowd full of people that I didn't know, or the gym shows were just friends and family. That's all it was. But that first time in front of a crowd that I didn't know and they didn't know me brought something out of me, and I had an absolute blast.
I always heard those Desert Rose shows were kind of rowdy, though.
Oh, they were.
Because they had booze. You could get booze right there at the bar, yeah. And they get hammered.
I think as the kids' class, we only wrestled at the Desert Rose maybe 3 or 4 times, but there was one time in particular that I was teaming with the big dog Tony Williams, who was of mixed descent, but he was darker than he was lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something to somebody in the crowd, and the guy stood up, serious as could be. He waited for it to get quiet, and he said, "Boy, if I had a tree, I would hang you." And I looked at Tony and I said, "Hey, we're not going to work that side of the crowd tonight. And we're going to go ahead and leave as soon as this match is over." Yeah, they got wild. I know there was one match with Suicide Solution and Trevor Lowe and somebody else. They started fighting into the crowd, and they immediately fought back to the ring. And I knew they were supposed to fight on the outside for quite a while, but they didn't. And I asked what happened, and I guess a fan had started jabbing Suicide Solution, like, in the side. So Trevor grabbed them before they could react and got the one with that was being hit by the fan, got him back in the ring to just kind of put the kibosh before anything too crazy happened. Suicide Solution, legitimately crazy. Nice guys. They always treated me well. but I was scared that they were probably going to kill somebody. Not an opponent, probably one of each other with the crazy ideas that they had.
All right. So then from there, the YWA.
We were traveling with the IWA anytime that they had a show outside of the gym. We would be the youth exhibition match.
And see, I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to ask, because maybe some of the listeners of the podcast were going, wait, whoa. 8, 9-year-old, 10-year-old, 11-year-old kids wrestling?
Yeah.
How'd you get away with that?
Well, the athletic commission was very lenient back then. I don't think they came to a lot of shows. They didn't have a reason to. So we would always go on before the show. Technically, if bell time was 8, our match would be about 7:45 p.m. We weren't paid. We were the youth exhibition match. I think the first, and I'm not trying to, you know, toot my horn here or anything, but the first of the kids to start traveling were Kyle and I.
Mm-hmm.
We would go to Cleveland with Shank Dorsey and Casanova Click and Tank. We would go to Cleveland and just to be around wrestling. You know, that's a, we're kids. We love wrestling. We just wanted to be around wrestling. At this point, we're, you know, 14 years old, getting to travel. They're like the seniors in high school, and we're the freshmen, essentially.
Right,
you
yeah,
know?
Right.
So we're getting to hang out with the older guys, and our parents knew them and trusted them, so we would travel with them to these shows, and we started going to so many shows that they just started booking us. I don't think they necessarily knew that we were kids. I think they just thought we were smaller men. Or we were just getting away with it. I don't know. But
okay.
We right. started getting booked in Cleveland on a very regular basis. And then I started going to Piqua. Went to Indiana a few times. Went to Pennsylvania a few times. West Virginia a few times. Really, just anywhere we could hop on a small show, we would get on. We would never just say, yeah, we're kids. You know?
Okay.
We all just right. would kind of sell ourselves as wrestlers, which we were. We just happened to be a lot younger than everybody else on the card.
Gotcha. Okay. And now, when you talk about traveling with some of these folks, and being, if you will, the freshmen hanging out with the seniors, did you get an informal education on things, if you will?
Oh, they were relentless about everything in life. I can remember, it was on the way back from my first Cleveland trip that I was in Shank Dorsey's back seat, and I fell asleep. And my head happened to be right by the speaker. You know, I was leaning up against the back of the car in the back seat. And Shank took that opportunity to blare the radio as loud as he could. Scared the crap out of me because I'm in a dead sleep. And he told me that you never sleep in the car unless the driver tells you to.
Okay.
So I learned that way, hey, you don't sleep. You know, everybody has to stay awake to help the driver stay awake. All kinds of things like that. And also, I think just they were all kind of like our big brothers at some point. So they would just torture the crap out of us, but all in fun.
Yeah, no, I got you. I got it.
But more than anything, just like that was when I learned the most fun on the independent wrestling level, the most fun you're going to have is riding to and from the show.
And agreed, yeah. I mean, that's always been my experience, too.
So, getting to ride with those guys and hear stories, not only about wrestling, just about life,
mm-hmm.
was amazing and something that I think a lot of guys could use more of before they really start branching out.
So, from there, after the YWA, if I can say it, the YWA was done, did you ever compete for the IWA?
No, I mean,
because I'm going to be honest, I think when I first met you, you were in FIW.
Yeah.
And you were still 17.
Yeah, what happened was when Matt Mason and James Costa and Shank and Tank and, you know, Rugby Thug and a number of those guys, when they left the IWA to go to FIW, Bull would no longer let them come to the kids' shows and watch. So, a lot of those guys, you know, like I just said, mm-hmm. I built some pretty strong relationships with. So, I would still go to FIW shows and watch them. And one day, Mark Stone said, hey, I've got this idea. I want to bring you in, but I don't want to use you as a wrestler until you're actually 18. So, I want to have you cut promos where you just keep counting down until this big show that I have planned, which is just after your 18th birthday. Endgame was the name of the show. So I kind of thought about it, and then I made the decision to do it, which, I mean, back then, you know, I'm 17 years old, and I think it's the biggest deal in the world that I'm about to leave the IWA.
Well, and it was, let's just be honest. It was kind of a big deal for everybody that was involved, because there were a lot of promises made, a lot of hype that was circulated about what FIW was going to do, and albeit, Mark Stone delivered on some of that hype.
Yeah.
I mean, they were drawing fans. I mean, the show I went to before I joined on, that place was pretty packed.
I mean, they ran Reynoldsburg, Ohio, which has a couple of high schools in it, on a Friday night, and they would draw 300-400 people.
Yep.
So you can't argue with that. But I was the YWA champion, and Kyle and I actually ran the kids' class for an extended period of time.
Okay.
So we did all the booking, we did all of the, you know, we would choose who would go do the IWA shows, the exhibition match. So I was the champion, and I wanted to drop the belt before I left, because even at 17, 4 years in the business, I knew that was the right thing to do. So Kyle and I were booked in a 2 out of 3 falls match that was going to go 45 minutes. We had got the okay to do a long match, and we were going to go 45 minutes. And I was going to drop the belt and leave the IWA. And we were less than 5 minutes into the match, and Kyle went to do a baseball slide between my legs, and his foot got caught in a hole in the mat, and he snapped his shin.
Ooh.
So we obviously ended the match right there. And I can remember Kyle screaming in pain and then telling me he was sorry. And something just snapped in me because I was so pissed off that it had happened that I told him, it's not your fault. It's, you know, their fault for not fixing this fucking ring. And, you know, just all the problems that I had with how, you know, crappy the building was and how crappy the upkeep was and all that. It just kind of came out at that moment. And I told Bull that Wednesday that I was leaving. And he asked if I was going to the FIW. I said, I'm not sure, because I really wasn't sure at that point.
Sure.
I just wanted to get out of there. And then Mark Stone had, you know, called and talked to me more and just kind of sold it even more for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing the promos at FIW shows. I would be in gear. It was kind of a Piper's Pit style thing. There would always be... I would help further another storyline, but also get mine along even more.
Right.
And then I would always have, you know, however many days it was until the show, you know, or 253 days until you find out that I am the future and the future looks good. So, I mean, I was hyping this show I started hyping it in December, and the show wasn't until the beginning of the following November.
Yes, that was accurate. If it's Endgame, it was Endgame
2002.
Yeah. That was November.
So I hyped this show and my debut as a wrestler for almost a full year, which is crazy.
It's
crazy on any level, right. Let alone independent wrestling in the Midwest.
Right.
Every show, you know, I would get in the ring before the show and roll around with Matt Mason, Marcus Dillon, Shank, CK3, Rip Malibu. You know, any of the guys that were there, I would still get in the ring and wrestle around with them. And then it came time for Endgame, and I wrestled Mace Parker.
He was from the YWA, wasn't he?
He was from the YWA as well.
Who else came out of the YWA class? I know Kyle and you. Southern Delight, Kyle Wright, as he was known in FIW.
Kyle, myself, Mace.
Ryan Midnight, right?
Ryan Midnight. Aaron Andrews, Jabari,
okay,
Matt Taylor.
Was Carlton Kaz in that?
He was not. I think he started right when he was 18.
Okay.
But what happened was he realized, like, by the time he was training, a lot of the adults were gone. So he would come and learn a lot of the basics in the kids' class because he knew that the kids' class was serious and we were going to be working, whereas in his class there weren't that many people.
Okay, okay.
So he would come to the adult class and the kids' class.
Okay,
just so that he could learn as much as he
right,
could.
Yeah, right, yeah,
right. I mean, I know I'm forgetting somebody. But.
Well, so here's my question is, Kyle was in FIW, I think, right around the same time that you started making your...
He left countdown, after
right?
me. No,
oh, he left after
he
you?
He left well after me. I was the first of the...
You were first, then came Kyle and all
first,
the other ones?
Then came Mace.
Mace, okay.
Then came Kyle.
Okay. And then later Aaron. I remember Aaron Andrews was
yeah,
much
he
later.
Did. He did a couple FIW. Yeah, it was much later. Yeah,
yeah. Much later. So, all right, but then, so you get to FIW.
Yep.
You make your debut.
Yep.
On Endgame.
Yeah, which actually was the end of the company.
Right, I was just going to mention that.
Yeah.
Well, that was the end of the company.
Sure was.
So, how did that make you feel?
At that point, I kind of, you know, saw the writing on the wall, because a lot of people don't realize it, and I think you touched base on this, that I don't remember how it happened, but Mark Stone, Drew Hansen... You and I
right.
ended up as the writers.
Right.
I don't remember how I ended up on it, but I knew that I didn't want everybody to know and I didn't want to book my own stuff.
Right.
I think it worked because I wasn't wrestling yet.
Correct.
So I couldn't, you know, put myself over if I wasn't even wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know how, and again, I don't know who made that decision. I remember that the reason that the creative team was built was because it was during that split where... Paul Daniels and Roger Baker took some of the talent and went to go build PWC.
Yeah.
And that left a core group of us behind for FIW, and Mark had approached me about doing it. And because I was always pitching ideas. I mean, that was just me and my enthusiasm. I was pitching ideas all the time.
I think it's just
so.
To keep the wheels going. It's the same thing that we do now.
Right.
I may throw 100 ideas at you for OCW... And you may like them all, but it's not like you're going to be able to use all 100 of them. You might use three. But if I don't keep the wheels going on that, sooner or later it's going to get rusty and I'm not going to be able to give out as many good ideas as I think that I have.
Right. I mean, yeah, so that was and I actually, as I said, I took it very seriously, maybe more seriously than I should have.
Well, hindsight's always 20/20.
20/20, right, but, you know, and I mean, I'm not going to rehash that because that was several podcasts
I don't remember a lot of it. I'll tell you what I do remember is there were quite a few times that there would be a booking meeting at a Fazoli's in Reynoldsburg, and you would come all the way to the west side and pick me up.
I know, I did. I made that like two or three times I did that happen because I had that old pickup truck.
That's what I was going to say, the old pickup truck, you'd pick me up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so... So then from FIW, it's BWC. Yeah. Now, were you working other places, too, in FIW?
I think
you were working at VCW.
Yeah,
was
I was working
that one?
VCW out of Piqua. I think I was still going to Cleveland for Sheik and GMO a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But I was also slowing down because at this point, I was a senior in high school. And, I mean, I started wrestling when I was in 7th grade.
Mm-hmm.
So all the way up until my senior year, I had never really... partied. I had never really gone to the football games and basketball games. I was always...
Normal stuff.
Yeah,
I had... quote-unquote normal high school experience.
Exactly. I didn't do that. I mean, I would go to dances now and then, but really I was working shows on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Or I was practicing throughout the week. So now I don't have to worry about the practices throughout the week. We didn't have a wrestling school at that point. I wasn't part of the IWA. So... My senior year, I started going to parties more. I got more into dating. I lived my senior year, essentially, the way that I should have. So I wasn't wrestling as much. And also, I just was sore. You know, physically, I was beat. I was worn out. The PWC came along. You know, their first show, I think, was... Well, the first show I was booked on was the month after Endgame in an old FIW building. And they had this concept for... It was the VFRO up on the north side.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they had
yeah.
this concept for what they would call the 8-4-2 ladder match.
Right.
which is what now is in OCW as a Stairway to Stardom. And they booked me as the surprise participant, which I laughed about at the time. You know, who's going to care that I'm in this? I wrestled one FIW show and cut a bunch of promos.
Yeah.
Other than that, I wrestled in the kids' class. You know,
right,
these
yeah,
people,
right.
The people didn't know who I was, whatever. But the most memorable part of that, to me, was I was the last one announced. Because the match would start when all eight men got in the ring. Mm-hmm. The Battle Royal would start. And I was the last one introduced, and they came up to me and said, hey, everybody just kind of went out and didn't work the crowd. We need you to draw your entrance out a bit. And I said, no problem. So I let my music play for about a minute and a half before I went out. And then I slowly stalked my way out. There was a ladder set up in the entranceway. I climbed up to the top of that ladder and just was flipping off random people in the crowd. And there, I can see the guys in the ring who are just getting irate that I'm taking this long and that I'm not getting in the ring. They're ready to start. They don't know that they told me to drag my entrance out. So by the time I actually got in the ring, they were just livid and everybody wanted a piece of me. And they all did try and take a piece of me just because they thought I was just dragging out my entrance and being a dick. I was actually asked to do that. Jason Thunder and Virus still make fun of me for that entrance. I mean, that was 11 years ago at this point. They still make fun of me for that. But that's all right. It was...
Because I think my first PWC show, I think, was in February. Because I know I didn't work 8-4-2 because I still had the...
Was that in Newark?
I think so.
At the gym?
At the gym that they had. Yeah, where you had to go up the flight of steps in order to get things. Yeah, I think
I
that...
I worked Shane Christian on that show.
Yes. Yes. That was also the infamous night that I got major heat with the new hotness Todd Richards because I went... They had that stupid CD player.
Yeah.
Okay. How professional was this? They had a 5-disc changer.
Yeah.
I go, I don't know. The DJ said something about we don't have music for this guy, Todd Richards. Okay. So, first time, in fact, I think this is the first time I ever met Todd. I go in the back and go, hey, do you have any music? He goes, I don't have anything. I'm like, okay. I go, well, do you want something in particular? He goes, play something like rap-ish or hip hop. Okay. So I tell the DJ this. Motherfucker breaks out. New Kids on the Block. And Todd Richards was furious with me. And I'm like, dude, I did not do that. That's not what I told him rap or hip-hop. Clearly, he does not have the same definition we do. So, yeah.
Well, he lived.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the... Yeah, I mean, later, fast forward a couple years, he's sticking his big hairy ass out the car of my out the side of my car window, you know.
Yeah.
Driving home from Strasburg. So, I mean, you know, it's all good. It's all good. So, anywho, so PWC rolled along.
Yeah. I think I only wrestled for them 2 or 3 times.
Really?
Yeah. I do know that... maybe that was an FIW show. There was one show where... Yeah, it was an FIW show. I was really sick. I had like 105-degree temperature. And I was cutting a promo. And I knew in my head I had this line that I wanted to... look out when as soon as somebody would start giving me shit, I wanted to tell them something along the lines of, you know, oh, blah, 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 your mom's still upset that you're an abortion that lived.
Oh, I remember this.
So I'm looking out and I say it like, you know, I'm trying to think too far ahead of myself. I feel like hell. And I look out and I say, you're just upset because you're an adoption that lived. And as soon as I said it, I remember looking up, and I could see, like, up above the tables, there's, like, a little area where some of the boys were sitting, and I saw Matt and Marcus sitting there right after I said it, and they just shook their head looking at me like, what the hell is wrong with you? And I just kind of shrugged and said, eh, oh well.
Because that was, I think that was in, was that in Newark where we had that one show that was in that gym that had the upper balcony that went around?
I don't remember.
I think it was there. And I think you were accompanied by Mr. Ninja, too, at that
probably.
Time.
Probably. Madrock's personal security. Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty blurry. I mean, it's crazy to think that was, you know, 11 years ago?
Yeah.
That's crazy to think.
That is. It is. But,
yeah. So, at this point, we're towards the end of my senior year, and I've always had problems with my knees, but I finally broke down and went to an orthopedic doctor And they ran multiple tests and x-rays and MRIs, and they came back and said there was no structural damage that they could see. There was no bone damage that they could see, but the next step would be to slice me open and kind of look around my knee and see what's going on and causing all this pain. And I mean, I'd already known that I was apparently born with arthritis in both of my knees, and it just over time, you know,
kept getting worse. Yeah,
eats away at my knees. So the doctor, he said, you know, he knew about wrestling and all that, and he told me to be, I mean, I was 17, 18 years old at this point. He said, honestly, if you want to play with your kids when you get older, you probably should stop wrestling. You know, your knees are, he said, right now, you're 18 years old, you have the knees of a man in his early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Which just blew me away. So I thought about it, and I said, you know what, I'm going to keep wrestling and see how this goes. So that summer, I started traveling with Carlton Kaz and Bruce Gray. And I got to go to quite a few big, fun places.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I got on at IWA Mid-South for a show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
right,
I got
yeah.
booked again, but all that fell through, and they got evicted from the building. Just, I got to do a lot of fun stuff that summer, but my knees just wouldn't let up. And I just decided to stop wrestling. You know, the doctor told me it would be a good idea to stop wrestling. So I stopped wrestling that November, and which just crushed me. I just remember just, like, wondering, you know, I just spent 6 years of my life doing this, and everybody would always say, oh, those kids, when they turn 18, they're going to get signed, they're going to be so big, they're going to do this. Well, in reality, doing this stunted all of our growth. None of us really grew past 15, you know? If you look at all of us, we're the same size we were back then, height-wise, at least. So it just crushed me, and I stopped watching wrestling. You know, I boxed everything up, put it away. I didn't want to be reminded of it because I couldn't do it anymore. And then one day, Matt actually for a while was trying to get me to come check out OCW shows. I just knew it would probably be better if I didn't. And then one day he said, hey, you know, Jeff Cannon wants you to come to the show. He wants to talk to you. Oh, great. So I went to, it was actually the last show at the Coshocton Armory.
Oh, yeah, the old armory.
Where Beastmaster had the bear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, so, he had the bear at every event at that particular time. But, well, I mean, yeah, he had a bear.
Yeah. A bear came to the ring with him.
Sure. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So after the show, Jeff says, hey, I have this idea. I've wanted to do a heel commissioner. I think you would be great for it. And I said, I don't really want to be a commissioner, but I've always wanted to manage. He said, okay, I'll let you manage Matt and Jamie. And mm-hmm. Tank, the A-list.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So I came in as their agent.
Right.
Well, that lasted for about 2 shows, and he made me the commissioner.
Right, right.
And then I did that for probably like a year, and then I became a manager. I did that for close to a year, and then there was a match. Jeff had turned heel at this point, and it was Jeff and I against Matt Mason and Jamie.
Right.
It was in November of 07.
Right.
And after the match, Matt said to me, you could do this every weekend again if you wanted to.
So how did the knees, if I can interrupt, how did the knees feel in between here? Because that, I mean,
I guess that's fine.
The one thing that we've never talked about. And I have never talked about is like,
yeah,
you know, all of a sudden you were doing all these things and then you were back wrestling. And I guess we've just never really breached the subject of, did the knees, are they better? Are they not better? Did you just say, fuck it, I'm doing this? Or, like, what?
During that time where I wasn't wrestling or anything, they were fine.
Okay.
I mean, I would have periodic soreness, but really, if the weather has any kind of drastic change in the humidity,
yeah,
my knees are killing me.
Right.
That's going to happen for the rest of my life.
Right, right.
So, but nothing too serious, and I had that match, and Matt said that. It got me thinking, and then close to that time was when the Rocky Balboa movie came out,
mm-hmm.
when he said he still had stuff in the basement.
Yeah.
And close to that time was when Chris Jericho came back with the Save Us campaign.
Wow, that was then?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So when he came out, I remember just seeing how stoked he was.
Yeah.
You know, and just seeing how happy he was. And I text Jeff and said, hey, if I wanted to start coming to the gym a little bit and seeing if I can get back in the ring. Would that be okay? He said, yeah, sure. So we worked out this plan for me to start training in early December and maybe by June be back in the ring. Well, in January, Ryan Midnight and Christian Vaughn won the OCW tag titles.
Right, exactly, and Stairway to Stardom.
Correct, yeah. And Christian Vaughn got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So they needed a tag partner for Ryan Midnight, and Jeff said, well, you're ready. I didn't think I was, but that was how I started wrestling again. I came back, and then the next month was War Games in Rittman.
Yeah.
You know, the next show.
Right.
So I kind of came back and was thrown right into the thick of things. But, yeah, I've been doing it ever since then, which was February of 2008.
And the knees are cool they're the same that they were. I mean, I'd say,
yeah, they're probably the same. I mean, some days they're sore. Some days they're a lot more sore than others. But I'm also in a lot better shape than I've ever been. So I think by doing more leg workout and doing more cardio and doing the yoga and, you know, I've learned what, I mean, I'm older now, but I've learned what my body's limitations are. And I've learned some days when I show up at a show, you know, I'm ready to go 100 miles an hour and do whatever I can and go out and, you know.
That was going to be my next question. Like, does your knees dictate how you wrestle on the show?
Yeah.
Like, if they're bothering you, hey, we're going to slow it down. It's going to be more old school.
Yeah, I mean, my knees or my back. You know, past couple years, I've had more back problems. But if I don't think I can perform the kind of match I want to physically,
mm-hmm.
you know, if I don't think, okay, I can go out there and have a balls to the wall match, I'm not going to try to, because I don't want anybody to get hurt, myself or whoever I'm wrestling.
Sure.
But on the flip side of that, if I feel like I'm ready to go balls to the wall, I'm going.
Right.
You know, and that's happened quite a few times.
Sure.
You know, the OCW 10-year anniversary show, myself and Ron Mathis, I told them, I'm ready to rock. You know, I'm ready to steal this show and tear the roof off. And we went balls to the wall.
Who would you say, would be your toughest opponent?
Toughest opponent, like...
Who's pushed you the farthest, I guess? Let's go that route. Yeah, let's go that route. Because, I mean, you obviously, you've wrestled a long time, you know, with that break in between there. But who do you think has always pushed you or had pushed you to really go above and beyond what you thought you were able to do in the ring?
Probably Matt Mason, for sure. There have been plenty of times where we've been in the middle of a match and he calls something and I say, I can't do that.
Okay.
And he says, you are tonight. And then I do it and realize, oh, okay,
yeah,
I can.
Who has been somebody you have not looked forward to working with? Your least favorite opponent?
Because
I'm going to safely assume, so in that last question I asked you, Matt Mason was to be your favorite opponent to work with? Or is that erroneous of me?
I don't know. I mean, I love working Matt. Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
But I think both of us love working each other, and we know that we can always have some fun matches together, but they aren't all great. You know,
I think for every
great match that he and I have had together, there have been three or four that we'd rather not tell anybody about. I think my favorite person to work is probably either. That's really tough. It's probably either Juice Jennings.
Okay.
Or, I mean, I really like working Jeff Cannon. We have, like, a really good Tully and Dusty kind of chemistry that we can just go out and look at each other and kind of tell what we're going to do from there. But I really, really, really enjoy... my favorite person to work with, period, to do anything, is Caden Asad.
Okay. All right.
So, tagging with Caden, we could go out and just do a 2-minute match with a 2-minute promo, and it's probably the most fun I'm ever going to have.
Okay.
He brings something out of me, and I bring something out of him, and I absolutely love him.
Least favorite person to work with?
I don't know. Honestly, and it's not a dig against him, but like the past three times, and it's been a long time since I've worked with him, but the last three times I worked with Sherman Tank, I got hurt. Not hurt, not injured, like, you know, I couldn't wrestle the next show, but he's a big boy, and I don't know that he realizes how strong he is.
Okay.
He's got some heavy hands.
Okay.
Some heavy hands.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I know my partner on the last episode of the podcast might agree with you, because I know Adam Michaels has had a few squashed grapefruit, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
From a spine buster or two or whatnot. Because he said the same thing about Tank. He's a big boy that sometimes doesn't realize that he's that big. So, all right. Do you want to do word association game?
Yeah, let's rock.
Okay. All right, I'll throw out names. You one or two adjectives to describe them. Let's go with, a guy that was also kind of more along the lines of doing a Piper's Pit type of thing, Brady West.
Brady was funny. But I think he, at times, Brady would try too hard.
Mm-hmm.
But he was always funny to me. I never had any problems with him.
Okay. How about Shane Christian?
He was very talented, but not as talented as he thought he was.
You mentioned a couple of these guys, so I'll throw them out. Unknown, Virus, and Jason Thunder. Do them separately together, however.
Okay. Unknown was very talented. Like, he was very good on the mic, which is weird for a masked guy.
Yeah.
He's good on the mic. He could work heel or baby,
mm-hmm.
but I think he was a better heel.
I agree.
But I think a lot of people didn't know how to take him, so a lot of times people thought he was being a dickhead in the back. Really, he has a very abrasive personality. I think I do, too, to a certain extent. A lot of people don't know how to take me. They think I'm being a dick. Really, I'm just completely joking. But he has a very abrasive personality. Jason Thunder, I love him to death. I still talk to him to this day. I was just texting him this morning. He is one of my favorite people on earth, because whenever you're talking to him, you can count on an honest, real, genuine response.
True, yes.
And he is one of my favorite people outside of wrestling to ever party with, because you never know what you're going to get with him.
I was going to say, my fondest memory, and I agree wholeheartedly, Jason Thunder was just one of the most unique personalities, made me laugh to no end, and I agree with you, very genuine.
Yes.
That was going to be the word I would have used to describe him. But I remember the time that he came to the back, it was at Ripman, and he was taking on somebody, I think, like, named Johnny Lightning, or I think so. All I remember is this kid was from the Cleveland area, and he had Benoit tights.
Yes. And it wasn't long after.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
Because I didn't like this. I know where we're going, but I'm going to let you finish.
So, Jason goes, what should we do for a finish? And jokingly, I go, what you should do, because they had this little mustache.
Yep.
I go, what you should do, Jason, is you should tie your opponent to the railroad tracks and stand over top of him and twirl your handlebar mustache like they do in the 1920s movies. That crazy motherfucker. There's a spot in the match where he got underneath the ring and brings out some rope and tied the kid to the rail and then ran around the ring going, choo, 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 and gave him, like, I think a kick or a forearm or something, and then stood over him and twirled his mustache. I was in tears behind the table. I was in absolute tears. I was like, he was crazy enough to fucking do that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man. Oh.
Last one, Virus, is
honestly
one of my best friends.
Mm-hmm.
He is, I know I said the word talented about all those guys, but they really are. He's just a natural freak athlete.
Mm-hmm.
He was always a great, you know, high flyer wrestler. Never one to talk on the microphone.
Nope.
But always great in the ring. Very giving. You know, he wants to make everybody else look good. Outside of wrestling, just one of the best men that I know in life. He's a fireman for two different fire stations. great husband, great family man, great friend.
All right, let's go with a fellow who, well, is known throughout the state of Ohio, especially in the northeast corner, who's no longer with us, JT Lightning.
I met JT when I was probably like 15.
Okay.
I was doing a show in northeast Ohio somewhere, and before the show, I'm in the ring stretching out with the rugby thug Trent Baker, and JT comes in and starts setting up his gimmick table. And
you didn't steal one of his shirts, did you?
No. Okay. No. Right. I'm very glad I didn't, because he probably would have murdered me. He is setting up his gimmick table, and G-Mo walks out of the back, and they start yelling back and forth across the building. You're like, oh, you son of a bitch. I didn't know you were going to be here. Oh, yeah, fuck you. You don't like it. You do something about it. You know, and I thought, man, these guys are hilarious. You know, that's how they greet each other. No, they didn't like each other. And they meant what they were saying and started fist fighting at the gimmick table. They, like, ran and met each other and just started
like a kung fu movie?
Yeah. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. You know, I know G-Mo. This was my first time meeting JT. And I thought, oh, my God, what is happening here? I didn't do anything to break it up, though, because JT was a big guy.
Yeah.
So it gets broke up, and JT's like, fuck you, and fuck you. I'm out of here. He grabs all of his gimmicks and just leaves. Leaves the show. So that show ended up having about 8 people there. And, I mean, he made the right choice by leaving, let's say that. And then I didn't really see or talk to JT again until I went to a Cleveland All-Pro show. I know this is supposed to be a short story, but
go ahead.
I met JT then. This is when I really met JT, because Matt Mason was booked for Cleveland All-Pro. I go up, I tell JT, you know, I introduce myself, I say I've got my gear if he needs anybody, and because Matt had already told him that,
mm-hmm.
you know, I would be coming. He said he didn't need anybody. Okay. So I was with Pat.
Okay.
Pat Short?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So Pat and I are sitting out in the crowd, you know, before the show starts, and then JT comes out and says, hey, anybody that's not a wrestler, get over to the bar right now. Get the fuck out of this room. And I thought, okay. I know what it was. He said, if you're a wrestler, get to the back right now. And I said, hey, does that mean, like, you want me back there? And he said, if you're not on the show, get the fuck over to the bar. And he was looking dead at me when he said all this. And I thought, oh, okay. I mean, you couldn't be more direct than telling me you're not using me, you know? So I go over to the bar, and I'm thinking, oh, man, is he about to try and make me pay to get into this show? You know, I'll just tell Matt, like, hey, I'm getting out of here, you know?
Right,
I'm not going to pay to get in. Well, then I got a text from Matt that said, where are you? I said, he kicked me out. He told me to get over here to the bar. And Matt said, okay, he's back here yelling, asking where the fuck you're at, because you're the second match. So, I don't know if he just didn't know who I was, if he was ribbing me or what, but he went from telling me he didn't need anybody.
Right.
Telling me directly to get the fuck out because I'm not on the show, to yelling in the back about where am I because I'm on the show. And he used me for a few shows after that. He was always great with me. Another person you can count on to give a real honest opinion to you.
Okay.
More than anything, though, like, he's like the godfather of Cleveland independent wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
If you look at the guys that he trained, helped train, you know, he was one of the guys who brought, I think Punk and Cabana said he was the first guy to bring them into Ohio.
Right.
I know, you know, so many guys tweeted when JT died a story about JT that mm-hmm. that's the kind of legacy that, you know, you can't buy.
Right.
You know,
right.
He wasn't a nationally televised wrestler, but everybody who was somebody
knew him and knew something about him. Yeah, worked with him or interacted with him somehow. Right. Yeah. Okay, a couple other names we'll throw out. Marcus Dillon.
Marcus Dillon. Marcus was a giant to me because I think at the time he was probably 275.
legit 275.
Yeah. And I was, you know, a kid. A couple cliff notes. He spit on my dad. He was vocal about not liking kids wrestling. And then when I went to FIW, he was best friends with Matt. So I traveled with them all the time. He gave me a running chop at Universal Studios that made the entire park pause. And he was on burn notice recently. Yeah, that's...
Okay.
I love the guy to death. I wish he lived closer. He lives in Florida now with his wife and son. But, you know, he's in amazing shape now. I think now he's under 200 pounds.
Really?
He's ripped.
Yeah. Really?
I'll try and look up some pictures when we get done with this. Yeah, he's doing good for himself. I just wish he lived closer.
Okay. How about Trevor Lowe?
Trevor was a blast. He's an ordained minister. Like, he's not,
really?
Not even just ordained. Like, that's what he does for a living.
Okay.
I mean, he's a pastor.
Okay.
My favorite Trevor Lowe story is Kyle and I went to an IWC show where the main event was Dusty Rhodes versus Jerry Lawler.
Okay.
But earlier in the card, Trevor Lowe was working. And when he did his entrance, Kyle and I stood up and started yelling. And when he looked, I mean, he hadn't seen us in 3 or 4 years. When he saw us, his jaw just dropped and he jumped over the guardrail hugging us because he was so, like, elated to see us. It was just such a genuine reaction. It was really cool.
Cool. All right, let's talk a little bit then about, real quick if we can, who you liked as a kid. Like, when you watched wrestling, who were the people, the wrestlers that really just captured your attention?
I mean, I was a Hulkamaniac.
Okay.
I think anybody who, you know, I was born in 84.
Yeah.
Anybody who grew up when I did and says that they never liked Hulk Hogan, you might not have liked him all the time. You might not have been a Hulkamaniac, you know, the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you were a fucking Hulkamaniac.
Oh, yeah, because I agree. I never much liked Hogan, but I give the dude credit. When I would go to live WWF events, oh, you couldn't help but... Yeah. You couldn't help but be a Hulkamaniac for that moment.
Yeah.
I mean, because when he hit that, when he came through that curtain and you heard that music, man, even I was like, oh, I don't like Hogan. Yay! You know, you couldn't help, but yeah. So I agree totally with that.
Yeah, you... So I was a Hulkamaniac. However, I enjoyed the NWA product a lot more. So as much as I loved Hogan and Savage, you know, I loved the Horsemen.
Why was that? Because see, this is the weird part. This is where you and I agree so much in terms of our opinion of wrestling, because I was the exact same way. Like, for me, the NWA World Class to me was 10 times better than Superstars of Wrestling on Saturday mornings. Why was it for you? Why do you think you gravitated more towards the NWA and the Crockett Promotions than Hogan and the WWF?
I have no clue. I don't know if it's because, you know, I think that the Aftermags, they kind of covered those places a little bit more.
Right.
Because, I mean, I grew up flipping through the pages of all those magazines that my mom had. I mean, she had magazines from the late 70s through, you know, the 90s.
Right.
So I think they covered those places a little more because the WWF had their own magazine.
Right, right.
So after the Aftermags, they kind of focused more on World Class, and I would read stories about Bruiser Brody or Abdul the Butcher, and then I would have all these tapes to go back on.
Mm-hmm.
I had one World Class Championship Wrestling tape, which Joe Spicer still has, by the way. That had about 12 hours of the ESPN stuff on it.
Mm-hmm. See, to me, I always thought that those promotions were a little more unpredictable than the WWF. I always felt that the WWF, I always knew what I was going to get, even as a kid.
I think that it's also, like, if you look at World Class, you know, Chris Adams would punch someone in the mouth. And it looked legit.
Oh, yeah. You know? It was a tougher, tighter type.
They were snug with each other.
Yeah.
Whereas the WWF was, you know, the palm on the forehead and the big rear back. It was kind of like watching WWE today or watching Ring of Honor.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Exactly. So I've always gravitated more towards the more realistic stuff. Mm-hmm. Kind of like you said, it's unpredictable, a little more realistic.
Right.
But I was always, without knowing it, you know, as a kid, I always liked the bad guys for some reason. You know, I loved the Freebirds. I loved the Varsity Club. Like, I don't know why. You know, I loved the Million Dollar Man. Like, I have no clue why. But I always liked the bad guys. I mean, I was still a Hulkamaniac, you know.
Sure,
and,
sure.
And I, you know, I popped.
And I think I was in between. I liked some heels, but I also liked some faces. I think I was, when I watched, I just was fascinated by the characters. As I tell the story, the reason why Bruiser Brody is one of my favorites, because I really thought when I turned on the AWA or World Class, someone's going to die.
Yeah.
When Brody hit the ring, someone's dying. Yeah. I bought into it, hook, line, and sinker, that this is the crazy dude from New Mexico who, with the wild hair and the furry boots and the big swinging chain,
yeah,
someone's dying.
Yeah.
And I might watch a homicide right here on television. Right. And I just bought into it. And I think the same thing, like, with the Freebirds, I was like, wow, Michael Hayes is so awesome. He is so cool. And, you know, and to me, that was the same with the Horsemen. They're so stylish. They're so cool. And the Road Warriors scared the crap out of me because they would go in there and literally eviscerate their opponents in, like, yeah, a minute. And to me, those characters are what stood out to me. And that's who I sort of gravitated to. Whether they were faces or heels, it didn't matter.
Just to go back a question. Oh, excuse me. To go back a question here. The reason I think that I gravitated more towards that is there was a period where we didn't have cable as a kid.
Okay.
So in turn, we didn't have wrestling.
Right.
And that was...
I went through the same thing.
That was probably a good 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Well, in that time, all I would do is go back and watch my mom's old tapes.
Mm-hmm.
So I was... And we had a majority of Crockett and World Class stuff. A little bit of AWA.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even a little bit of Mid-South stuff.
Yeah.
But that's what I was watching. Oh, and I watched the same tapes over and over and over again. So, you know, I can remember, like, I subscribe to the WWE Classics on demand.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the old NWA TVs are built up to the big shows that they would have, the pay-per-views, sure, or the Clash of the Champions. So the one that they're building up to right now was the Great American Bash with the Tower of Doom in Baltimore.
Oh,
that's one of the tapes that I had.
Oh yeah, you know, yeah,
where,
yeah,
it was Kevin Sullivan.
The three cages on top of one another, yeah, and the Varsity Club.
Precious
and,
is at the bottom.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So those, you know, these tapes. It's funny to go. A lot of these tapes won't even play anymore. You know,
right,
but
yeah.
That's what I watched over and over and over again, and that's where, when I, you know, I started wrestling when I was 13, so I wasn't far removed from watching these tapes.
Right, right.
So, you know, if I needed a finish, I remember one match, it was a tag match, and there was a manager involved, and they said, well, this manager, it's supposed to look like they're pulling for this team, but really, they're pulling for this team. I don't know why. What popped to my head was Jim Cornette was managing both the Dynamic Dudes and the Midnight Express at the New York Knockout, and when the Midnight Express went to use the chain, he caught it and said, no, 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 you're not, no, no, yeah, no, I can't let you do that. And then he popped the Dynamic Dudes.
Yeah, I remember that.
So then the Midnight Express went over, and they're heel now.
Yeah.
So in that match, my team was the Midnight Express. We made the other team the Dynamic Dudes, gave the manager, you know, the chain. They caught the chain when we tried to throw it in, and they turned on their team. So I've done that throughout my whole time in wrestling, and I tell people now that are training that they have such a leg up on,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
like when Matt Mason, yeah, and Tank and,
oh,
myself,
yeah,
when we were younger, we had to rely on the tapes that we had or the tapes we could go out and get.
Right.
Now they have YouTube.
Oh yeah.
Where all you have to do is YouTube the Great American Bash and
boom,
or
it's
a
there.
Clash of the Champions.
It's there.
Or,
yeah,
you know, WWF Primetime or whatever, and you have so much for free that you can access.
Right. And you have so much to get good ideas from.
Correct.
But also terrible ideas.
Oh, yeah.
Because one of the things I mentioned, I have a couple of Mid-Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
They're from WWE On
yeah.
Demand, but they're Mid-Atlantic from 1982, and there were some matches. I'm like, why were these on TV? These
oh, yeah.
are awful matches. Why, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it goes both ways. So,
yeah, I don't know. I think that it's, you know, technology's only going to keep progressing.
Sure.
So, at some point, you know, opposed to releasing DVD sets, it's going to be like electronic chips that have every single Clash of the Champions on it, and you just plug it into your TV. And
I'm glad you didn't say you plug it into your brain, because that would kind of make me a little afraid.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that'll happen at one point, maybe. Too. But
Matrix stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure those aren't the movies you'd be plugging into your brain, John.
Well, you know, what can I say?
Yeah.
I do have a copy of the Nude World Order in here.
I'm not surprised by that.
Anyways, I think that was the only wrestling-themed pornography tape that they, or movie that they made. Nude World Order.
I distinctly remember you showing up to Matt Mason's son's first birthday party.
Well, you're right. I forgot about that.
And giving he and I both a copy of the Hogan Knows Best parody porn. At his son's first birthday party, John.
First of all, I do believe I left the copies in the car, didn't I? I believe I
had I'm sorry. You left them in the car.
So they weren't technically, like, on the table. Like, hey, pass me some birthday cake. Here's the DVD of porn.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. What was I thinking?
I know. Okay, a small oversight. My bad on that one. My bad.
Yeah.
Anyways, all right, a couple of things to wrap up here, because, we've gone really long here looking at the clock.
That's what she said.
Hey, let's talk about the next time you and I will probably see each other. June 1st, OCW, National Guard Armory, 7:30 is the bell time. It is kind of a farewell to the hot commodity, Matt Mason.
Yeah, they're calling it the end of the era.
That's right. Matt has a knee injury and has decided to call it quits. So far, there's been one match already signed. Big Guns Jeff Cannon defends his OCW heavyweight title against Robbie Superstar, if you will.
Yeah.
Which would be a good match. Those two guys. I mean, you got the teacher and the student, if you will.
Yeah.
So that should be pretty darn good.
And Robbie's learned a lot.
He has. Who are you wrestling? You don't know yet. The office hasn't told you?
No. The office hasn't, John.
Okay.
We'll see. I will say this. Whoever I am wrestling, I don't wrestle again until June 1st.
Oh, so you got a couple weeks off.
So whoever I am wrestling that night, I'm pretty sure it's going to be one of those nights where I'm going balls to the wall.
Awesome.
Ready to steal the show.
There you go. Hey, I did want to plug this, too, because I read about this while I was kind of going through the websites there about Zema Ion.
Yeah.
Michael Parks, kid that's actually from back there in Chester, West Virginia.
Yep.
Made it to TNA, worked his way up through Cleveland and all kinds of indie promotions. Read where he had to have emergency surgery, I believe this week? Was it this week or late last week?
I don't remember. I think it was this week. He had a tumor on his colon. Right?
Yeah, tumor on his colon. He had to have emergency surgery, and he needs some help because he doesn't have any medical insurance. And if you go to www.giveforward.com, you can help to donate and help Zema Ion out with his medical bills. And I think that's a good thing, man. You know,
I think it's great, but my question is, why isn't TNA helping?
Well, that was going to be my question, too. I was going to try not to be the cynical guy on that. But, yeah, that's my question, too. You got billions of dollars, Dixie Carter. Why don't you...
I mean, he's an employee.
Right.
You know, I understand that it's not a wrestling-related injury or anything.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure that if... he's a pretty big name in the X Division.
Right, yeah.
So let's say WCW, late 90s, something happens to Dean Malenko. I'm pretty sure WCW's paying for that.
Yeah. Well, the thought went through my mind, too.
So I feel horrible for him that, you know, this is how it has to work out for him.
Like, yeah, I agree. No, I agree.
That's horrible for him.
And I are on the same page. I'm not going to lie to you. I was just trying to keep it positive. I wasn't going to go on this rant.
I hope it works out for him, honestly. Yeah, but that's crazy to me that TNA's not stepping
right, because I think they want to raise $30,000.
That's a lot of money.
That is.
And High Spots had a little bit of trouble raising $15,000 to do the Jim Crockett Promotions documentary.
Right.
So
that's half,
and that's people paying, saying I'm going to get a copy of the DVD.
Right,
you know what I mean.
Right.
So that's a lot.
That is. But if you get a chance, you're feeling generous.
Yeah.
Stop on over at www.giveforward.com. All right, last couple things here, real quick. Where could people get in touch with you on the social media or whatnot?
All I have is a Twitter,
and that would be
JMX98. You can watch me Sunday nights on Prime Wrestling, Sports Time Ohio.
There you go. Check that out. Check anywhere your cable outlet is. I don't know. Yeah,
I think there's a list on PrimeWrestling.com. Obviously, anytime there's an OCW show, I'm 99.87% going to be there. So check that out, OCWrestling.net, WarWrestling.com, pretty much at all those shows. Schedule coming up, let's see, June 1st OCW in Newark, Ohio.
Where are you June 8th? Because we had this conversation about not only going to Ring of Honor in Columbus, Ohio, but also about the Postal Service coming to town.
Oh, yeah, well, that's sold out, or else Jenny Lewis would be mine. I'm happily married, I'm kidding. I don't know, I may be closing on my house.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know that I'm going to be able to go to Ring of Honor. I really want to.
Okay.
I
thought you told me, though, you were booked somewhere. Because I think I texted you something about...
Oh, I was, and it got canceled.
Oh, okay. Because yeah, I texted you about the Postal Service. Postal Service coming, Lewis is going to be there.
Yeah.
And then you were like, I'm booked.
Yeah, it was a fair or something, but okay. I looked as soon as the show was canceled, and it was sold out. Okay. So. All right. June 13th, I'll be with Prime. 14th, I'll be with Prime. 15th, I'll be with Empire Wrestling.
Where's that?
That's a new place. They're going to be doing a show in Middletown, Ohio. I don't know if they have a site or not.
Okay.
Honestly. Let's see. June 22nd, I'll be in Nelsonville, Ohio.
For the XWE.
I'm in a Powerball on a Pole match.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, to be honest.
That sounds like something out of American Gladiators.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know what it is.
On a pole match.
They've spent some time trying to explain it to me, but I don't know what it is. Definitely. I think it's kind of like a coal miner's glove match, where you got to climb up and get
the Powerball.
But the Powerball is like a money in the bank kind of thing.
Oh.
But I don't know if I get to then use the Powerball on somebody. Like, is it a disco ball?
I was hoping it was a basketball. And you
I don't know.
Slam dunk it in someone's face.
I have no idea.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear about that.
It's going to be interesting. I might take you with me.
When is that again?
June 22nd.
I'm free that weekend.
Boom. You're going.
I'll go with you.
All right.
You got it. All right. Well, you can get in touch with me if you want to shoot me an email, pvdcast@mail.com, or also I'm on Twitter @pvdmvp. It's time now for Orlando's faves, as I like to close out every show. First of all, this is really not a fave of mine, but I'm going to give my Stanley Cup predictions because it is Stanley Cup time, my favorite time of the year. I can't help but know a puckhead. I'm going to go in the finals. You're going to see the Chicago Blackhawks versus the Pittsburgh Penguins. I think the Penguins win the cup in 7 games.
In seven.
It's going to take 7.
See, this is why I can't get into hockey, because I feel like the hockey playoffs should be done by now.
You're right, because
they've been going forever.
It's not cold weather, as some people told me at the shoot job. It's not cold weather. Hockey should be done. But however, my faves, and again, I'm probably gonna get teased about this, but I don't care. Over the break that I had from doing the podcast, I started watching and completed season 1 of HBO's show Girls.
What?
Yes. Even though I am not the target demographic of that show, that's a darn good show. I can't wait to watch season 2, which I have in my possession.
I can't co-sign on this.
Why not?
What do you mean you have it in your possession?
I have procured a particular copy of season 2.
Oh, you didn't buy it, though.
Well, no, because it's not out yet. Okay, so no.
All right, I just wanted to make sure. But would you buy it? You like the show that much?
I may.
Doesn't Judd Apatow have something to do with that?
Yeah, he's like the executive producer.
Okay.
It's a well-done show. Look, it has nothing... I totally agree. I'm out of the target demographic, but it's well done.
Okay.
All right. I know I'm going to get tweets about, hey, John, can I see your vagina next time?
We'll talk after this.
Okay.
I'm worried about you.
All right, well, with that, we've gone a little bit long. Jeremy?
I farted.
You just...
I farted. Sorry, guys. You'd be glad you can't smell that.
Yeah, it's not in smell-o-vision, if you will.
Yeah.
Anyways, Jeremy Madrox, thanks for coming on, man. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I had fun. We'll do it again sometime.
You got it, most definitely. And for that, ladies and gentlemen, I will talk at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening.